So welcome to lecture 26 of Marketing 25010 Principles of Marketing, November 20th. Happy Thanksgiving week. I worked a long time to get that black squirrel up there holding a happy Thanksgiving sign. AI is really good, I'll tell you. You need the right program. Little patience, but you can get there. If you have not yet noticed on your Canvas webpage for the course, I've now added the link to your course evaluation. Of course, you should always do your flash survey course evaluation for all your classes. Of course you should. And I guess in general, you probably receive emails from flash survey reminding you about these. However, I want to encourage you, reward you for doing the survey. The evaluation is anonymous. I cannot reward you individually for either doing or not doing the survey. I don't know who's answering it, but I can reward you based on the percentage of the overall class that participates. Webbies, you too. Yes, you count too. So I'm going to add extra credit points for participation as follows. I'll award up to 0.5%. Again, it doesn't sound like much to you added in with everything else, or you're just on the margin in which you had it. 0.5% based on the overall class participation rate by Sunday, December 10 at 11:59 p.m. So, unlikely, it's never happened, but if 100% of the people participate by that date, I'll add 0.5% to everybody's grade. If 75% participate, I'll add 0.75 times 0.5 or 0.375%. If 50% participate, I'll add 0.25%. in extra credit. So you got to be doing this anyhow because the university wants it. I like seeing your comments. I actually do make revisions to the course based on what students tell me. In the early days, they told me a lot. These days, they're telling me less. Either they don't care anymore or it's working pretty good. But if you have thoughts for improvements, maybe not the one that says replace the professor, but other thoughts for improvements, let me know. I mean, I'll take them into consideration. Yeah? So do that and help yourself and help everybody else. Help the university, help me. So you're on the calendar, 20th November, tomorrow mini test 13, the last one of the 13 will open. It's gonna run I guess it depends when you count the break. Anyhow, for the moment it's gonna close next Tuesday. I guess that's enough time. After the Thanksgiving break. We had mini test 12 close on Sunday, average score 88%, and again, 13 will open tomorrow and run till next Tuesday. I've mentioned before, whatever material we get to after today, this is the end of mini test 13, we'll go into review test. It'll just be review only, it won't be for grade, but you can still take it to see what you know, what you don't know, and help the study for the final opening the 11th of December. Enhanced earning extra credit number 9 closed last week. The average is pretty consistent, 0.27. So you've added 2.3% there. If you also did the research extra credit, 2.8%. And then if you guys scored, you'll have over 3% in extra credit added to your final course grade. Can't beat that. So Amazon has decided to have a new offering out to the public. It's going to offer lower cost primary care to Prime members in their latest push into the healthcare sector. So Amazon.com is turning to Prime members. How many of you guys or your family Prime members? Just curious. A bunch. Jeez, everybody. To bolster its healthcare business, an industry where the company has sought to expand for years. So we're seeing a product development growth strategy at the corporate level. We're bringing new products out to an existing market of consumers. The tech giant revealed plans to offer its millions of Amazon Prime subscribers a low-cost annual membership to One Medical, the primary care business that they purchased for $3.9 billion earlier this year. Amazon says Prime subscribers can now become One Medical members for $9 a month or $99 a year instead of the typical price of $199 a year. So they're offering you a deal if you're a Prime member. So that's price in the marketing mix. A challenge for players like Amazon is convincing people who think of the company primarily for shopping to turn to it as a healthcare option. So here we have to understand consumers' attitudes, know what they are, see if they need to be changed, and then find ways to change them. Through the years, Amazon has added benefits to its Prime program to keep enticing shoppers to join and to continue their membership. The company has also increased the price for those added perks. Amazon has more than 200 million Prime members globally. Some estimates have shown that the rate of growth of Prime subscription signups has slowed in recent years. Well, 200 million people, at some point you got everybody who's got the money and interest, but still got to find ways to grow, creating pressure for the company to sweeten its Prime benefits to get them to add more to the subscription base. It's just the idea of value, price and demand, and of course the constant pressure for growth in corporate America. The company has previously turned to Prime members to scale up its healthcare ambitions. Earlier this year, it began to offer Prime subscribers unlimited access to commonly prescribed generic medications for $5 a month, so providing value to Prime members. In October, the company said it would begin delivering prescription medicines by drone. That's cool. In College Station, Texas, one of two cities the company has tested out for drone deliveries, so we'll see what happens there. So providing value through a new channel of distribution, drone delivery of your meds. Leading by design, how Hershey's is helping retailers create buzzworthy spaces. We're now talking about that portion of the place, P, product, price, place, promotion, product. I mean place, retailing, and we all know Hershey's. So the Hershey Company has ventured into retail design, aiming to create unique and exciting spaces for candy and shot snack products in collaboration with retailers. So here we talked about that channel of distribution relationship and how to work together with your channel partners. And here we have a supplier, manufacturer, Hershey's, working down the channel to provide value to retailers, help them sell more product, and of course more candy too, right? The initiative arose from data indicating 40,000 store remodels and openings in the next 5 years, which presents an opportunity for Hershey's to contribute to store planning. So retail growth. The company, known for Hershey's Chocolate World, anybody ever been to Hershey's Chocolate World in Pennsylvania as a kid? Yeah, not recently. Has tested designs in 25 stores and plans to collaborate on 300 designs in 2023. The design process involves starting conversations with retailers, understanding their challenges, and offering data-driven insights on human trends and shopping behavior in their stores that could help them to be more successful. So they're bringing values to retailers by understanding consumer behavior and what they can do to enhance that interaction, that relationship in the store with their consumers. Hershey's aims to go beyond promoting its own products. It seeks to enhance overall sales for retailers by creating a better space, designing an experiential world. We are in the experiential marketing phase of business, and telling a good story. Retailers see their sales increase across the entire category. So it works, providing the retail partner value. This emphasizes Hershey's view of the enduring importance of physical stores and highlighting the evolution of retail and the role of stores as places for learning about products, interacting with brands, and connecting with other people. For years, we've been hearing the phrase, retail is dead. I think the pandemic has shown us how wrong that phrase is. Retail is evolving, but physical stores aren't going anywhere, says Stephen Calhoun, Senior Manager, Retail Environmental Design for the Hershey Company. Finally, Kohl's. One of my favorite stores, but I'm afraid they might be getting airs. They might be going upscale a little bit. I don't know how that's going to work for me. Kohl's and Target went deep into beauty shopping shops. How does that impact the holidays? Kohl's has a new method for luring drive-by shoppers into its stores, adding plus Sephora to the sign. I think it's hysterical. This person, whoever's writing this article, is writing for a business publication. They're a business editor, business publisher, and they use the word luring. Couldn't we use something like enticing, encouraging, luring? But okay. The department store's 2020 partnership with the beauty retailer has become a key piece of its strategy, worthy of changing its shopping center signage and displacing its in-store jewelry counters. Originally expected to reach 850 Kohl's stores, the company last year said it would bring the beauty shops to all 1,100 stores. So we're seeing brand partnerships here. The relationship is bringing in new customers, and they're shopping at more than twice the frequency of our average customer. So they are appealing to a new target market with these Sephora stores. Target, which added Ultra Beauty Shop in shops to its stores, says the company has seen double-digit growth in beauty sales for the last 3 years in a row. That's pretty good. So successful brand partnerships. Just out of curiosity, has anybody been to a beauty counter in either Kohl's or Target? Is that something we do? A couple folks. For both retailers, the partnerships bring a broader assortment of prestige beauty products to stores. And prestige beauty is really where the holiday focus is in terms of gifting. You're getting a more luxurious gift versus just beauty products that you would buy at a drugstore. For fragrance, this is doubly true. The week of Christmas is more important than the rest of the month of December, with sales of fragrances during that period skyrocketing without fail over the past 20 years. So a bit about seasonal sales revenue and planning for it. For Kohl's, bringing Sephora in is already bringing in a younger consumer who's used to paying higher prices, thanks to Sephora's assortment. This could help Kohl's reinvent itself in the mind of the consumer and help them to expand the price point offerings they have. So are they planning to reposition the brand over what's near and dear to my heart? Pretty good stuff for a pretty good price. Are they now going to be moving their price points up? I don't know. I'll have to start shopping at Walmart. I don't know. Ultimately, it may be too early to tell the long-term impact of these partnerships, whether they'll drive growth for years to come or fizzle out. But in the meantime, Kohl's and Target each have a new page in the retail playbook and a convenient testing ground in the holiday season. So stay tuned. Let's see where it goes over time. All right, lecture notes, page 231, chapter 16, retailing and wholesaling, page 445 in the textbook. And we just left off with the early discussion about retailing. We were giving you a variety of examples of retailing, and we left off with some examples about what eBay was doing, develop in-store kiosks and surfaces that you press that acted like really big computer interactions. And here, it's all in action at an H&M in New York City just before the pandemic came out. Let's see how it was playing out then.
Hello, I'm the H&M Voice Interactive Mirror. You can find me in the biggest H&M store in the world, on the second floor at Times Square, where I live and breathe fashion.
Hello from New York. I am at H&M Times Square store, and I'm here today to introduce you the Voice Interactive Mirror, unique in the world. Follow me. Get closer.
Hello, I'm a voice assistant. What would you like to do? Take a selfie or get fashion inspirations?
Selfie.
Are you ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, look up at the camera.
Which one do you like?
Oh, that's cool.
And now we are going to test the voice interactive mirror.
Hello, I'm a voice assistant. What would you like to do? Take a selfie or get fashion inspirations?
Take a selfie.
Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
3, 2, 1, look up at the camera. Which cover do you prefer?
Fashion.
I'm uploading it for you now. Great cover. Use a QR code scanner to download it. If you have an iPhone, open your camera to scan the code.
I got the link. The picture is gonna upload here. There you go. I have the cover in high resolution. If I scroll down, I will see the suggested hashtag. And if I subscribe to the fashion newsletter, I will get 20% discount in my next purchase.
Let's take a look at some fashion inspirations. What would you like to do? Take a selfie or get fashion inspirations?
Fashion inspirations.
Would you like to see women's or men's fashion?
Men fashion.
Great. What men's style would you prefer?
Modern classics.
Here's a modern classics look we think you'll like. Use a QR code scanner to shop the look or get 20% off. If you have an iPhone, open your camera to scan the code.
Now I'm gonna scan the QR code to get the fashion look recommendation. Here we go. This is a suggestion. I get 20% discount off if I subscribe to the fashion newsletter. And of course, I can go directly and get this look in our e-commerce, add to bag, and there we go. It was so much fun.
And now it's your turn. 3, 2, 1, look up at the camera. Great cover. 3, 2.
Yes, yes, yes. So you get a sense for the involvement, the excitement, the fun factor of it. And hey, you can order it right on your, I guess, iPhone. What's wrong with the rest of us? But okay, so a little bit of stuff happening in the stores pre-pandemic. I haven't been there since, so I don't know. So retailing. Retailing involves all activities related to the sale or rental of goods and services to the ultimate consumer. B2C, not B2B, for personal, family, or household use. And a retailer is a firm or person engaged primarily in retailing. That was a truly brilliant definition. Don't want to miss that one. What is the economic justification and the realities of retailing? Well, retailers serve as purchasing agents for you and their sales specialists for their suppliers. Again, think back to that channel of distribution. What those middlemen do, they cause products to flow down, information to flow up. They act as both directions within the channel. So how do they do this? Well, they help the wholesaler, the manufacturer, to anticipate customers' wants. They're on the ground. They see what's going on. They know what's happening. Developing an assortment of products that consumers want in their area, acquiring market information, sharing it up the channel, and helping to finance the whole thing, because after all, nobody gets paid until the customer pays, or very few people do, and so they help to finance the whole enterprise. So retailers offer the utilities, think back to that first couple weeks of classes, of time, having the product when consumers want it, place, where they want it, form in the mix that they want it, and they aid in possession of the product, especially for expensive goods where title transfer can be an issue. They help out with that as well. It's relatively easy to become a retailer. Compared to manufacturing, there is no large investment in production equipment, obviously. Oftentimes, merchandise can be purchased on credit. This is one of the things where the Shark Tank folks always get a little concerned when you tell them you want to go into retail. They say, well, that's all fine and good, but you know what you push out there to retail, if they don't sell it, what do they do with it? They send it back to you. They want their credit for the things that didn't sell. How are you going to handle that? So you can get it on credit. Store space can be leased in some cities with virtually no down payment very easily. Or, as you well know, you can set up a simple website at a very modest cost. So you can become a retailer pretty easily. However, just because it's easy doesn't mean you'll be successful. A successful retailer is a merchant who sells goods that will not come back to those consumers who will come back. Little trick there. Of course, a retail firm also has to fulfill its other role of serving producers and wholesalers, giving them information, shipping product, storing product. This dual role is both the justification for retailing and the key to its success. Providing product downstream, providing financing, support, advertising upstream. They've got to work both ends of the channel of distribution. In 2023, who were the top global retailers, the most international companies? Walmart, we know. Amazon.com, we just talked about. The Schwartz Group, you may not know quite as well. They're in grocery out of Germany. Aldi, we know Aldi, right? We know the brand, yeah, Aldi. Out of Germany, discount grocery store. Costco, Ahold Delhaize, I don't know that one at all, also in grocery. Carrefour, I've seen in France. 7&I, Japan, The Home Depot, and IKEA. So those are the top most international companies in 2023, according to the National Retail Federation. In 2022, the top retailers with U.S. sales, Walmart, Amazon, Costco, The Home Depot, Kroger's, Walgreens, Target, CVS, Lowe's, and Albertsons. So those are all names we know. Those are pretty successful retailers overall. Now, retailing operating costs to run your retail store, that runs about 28% of sales. 28% of sales. Compared to a wholesaler, this is much, much higher operating costs. Wholesalers run at about 11%. Now put on your thinking cap for a minute and ask yourself, why is that true? Why is it so much more expensive to run a retail store than it is to run a wholesale shop? Any ideas accepted? Why might that be? Who's been to a, I don't know, Sam's Club or a Costco's and also has been to a grocery store? Anybody? How do those guys differ from each other?
Wholesalers sell in bulk.
In bulk. So for one thing, they're carrying massive amounts of product, not breaking up. They sell a lot at one time. And do they have it all beautifully displayed in counters? And oh, they don't. They display it in big racks. Sometimes you need help to get the thing on the top shelf. They're not having customers, much customer service, perhaps. So the difference here is it takes a lot to satisfy that retail consumer. Dealing with customers and all their needs, wants, and desires at the retail end and meeting their expectations is expensive. And so it costs more than double to run a retail space as opposed to be a wholesaler, just because of those expectations. Net profits for retailers vary a lot. Supermarkets only earn about 1% profit on their sales. 1%? How in the world can you stay in business if you're only earning 1%? The answer's on the slide again. How can you do that? Any ideas? Yeah. Say it again. I love it when the answer's on the slide and you can read the slide. It's huge volume. How many times do you buy milk, bread, cheese, egg, over and over and over and over and over again? And of course, in mass, not just you. So they get 1% of sales on a boatload of sales. Not everybody has that advantage as a retailer, right? So specialized retailers earn 10% or more. Why is that? Because specialized retailers don't turn over the product as much. How often do you go out and buy a gold bracelet? Not over and over and over again. It sits on the shelf for a long time. So they have to earn more per sale because of the lack of volume. An average net after-tax profit for retailers is about 2 to 3% of sales. Varies by industry, varies by category, but that's on average. In order to make sure you know what you're doing and keeping track of all your good work to earn a good net profit, we do have a variety of software programs out there who are here to help you. Retail Pro is one. Retail Pro Solutions, our most flexible point-of-sale solution yet, our latest retail management software, Retail Pro Prism, marries Retail Pro 9's comprehensive features with modern architecture and improved flexibility on every level at the point-of-sale. We deliver outstanding agility, data security, accuracy, and operational control for specialty retailers with reduced hardware and technical supports. Learn more We'll serve a market just like yours to help you make sure that you know what's going on in your business and being successful. We can classify retailers in a variety of different ways. One way is to classify them by their ownership and strategy. For example, independent retailers. This is a single store. It's not affiliated with any larger organization. Most retailers in the country are independent retailers. They're small, and as compared to shopping at a Walmart or a Kohl's, they're more expensive for the reasons we talked about. So if you've been to Scribble's Coffee, as far as I know, Scribble's Coffee is a single, freestanding, independently owned operation. And I guess I don't actually know if they're more expensive than Starbucks or not. or Mick Kay Bricker, as far as I know, she's just a single independent retailer. She offers good services, but she's just by herself. Because of the differences in the merchandise that you get at small stores and big stores, the service you get at small stores and big stores, it is a little difficult to compare the prices of chains and independent stores directly. Lots of customers are willing to pay extra for the service they consider valuable, such as credit, delivery, alterations, installation, a little return policy, and friendly, knowledgeable personal service. Although I hear sadly Joanne is struggling just now. I hope they make it. But who's been in a Joanne store? Okay. And in Joanne stores, you have a lot of personal service in each of the departments where they rush up and help you out? Yeah? Has it been your experience? Who's had the opposite experience? The joke among my family members is, man, when you're in Joanne, you're on your own, unless you're maybe over in the cloth area. So Joanne's, for example, offers framing, picture framing and stuff. My wife wants nothing to do with Joanne's when it comes to that. You're on your own. She prefers to pay much, much more and go to McKay Bricker because they'll help you pick out the frame. They'll help you pick out the stuff around the frame. They'll help you get them out. They'll put the glass on it. She's willing to pay more for that specialized service that you don't get over at Joanne. Another approach to retailing is corporate chain. This is an organization of two or more centrally owned and centrally managed stores that generally handle the same line of products in a chain. Unlike Scribbles, Starbucks, as you know, is a chain. Centrally owned, centrally managed, and more than two stores. Here we go, Joanne. I was just picking on Joanne. So Joanne, previously known as Joanne Fabric and Craft Stores, based in Hudson, Ohio, is the nation's leading fabric and craft specialty retailer with over 850 stores. Their strategy, Joanne has a fairly broad, relatively deep assortment with moderate prices and what I was just commenting on, our personal experience agrees with the slide, a level of personal service that varies quite a bit across the department. So that's sort of their strategy in the marketplace. What are the factors that differentiate a store from an independent, a chain from an independent store and the contractual form of a vertical marketing system? Size. Although I said two or more stores, the U.S. Bureau of Census considers 11 stores to be the minimum size for a chain. So yes, I said two or more, but if you're talking about the Bureau of Census, they say 11 stores or more. A corporate chain, unlike an independent store, has central ownership, central authority. So if you're engaged in a vertical marketing system contract, like a franchise, you don't get to pick and choose what you do in the store, mostly. They tell you what to do. So if they're saying you're selling Coke products, you can't decide, you know, my people would like Pepsi. That's not going to happen. If Scribbles wants to switch vendors of beans, they can do it. They own the store. So as compared to independent stores, the owners of chain stores lack unit autonomy. About 40% of retail comes from these chains. Another form of contractual vertical marketing system is retailer cooperatives. These are formed by small groups of retailers rather than somebody further up the chain. These retailers agree to establish and operate a wholesale warehouse. So picture the image, a whole bunch of retailers out here. They're trying to do business in that channel of distribution we've talked about. They're trying to reach out to a whole bunch of producers. That's tough to do if you're a small retail establishment here in Kent, Ohio. How's that working? So they put themselves together. They form a cooperative. They form a wholesale warehouse. And then that warehouse purchases and advertises among all these agreed upon retailers to get economies of scale. When I go to a producer, I'm here in Kent, Ohio, and I say, hey, give me a good deal on those picture frames, on those ties, on those screws. They say, what are you talking about? You're going to buy a teeny little amount. But I'm paired up with 20 or 30 or 40 other stores in the region in this warehouse, and they say, yes, we'll give you a deal. True Value is a retailer cooperative, as are Ace Hardware stores, as is ShopRite, formed by the retailers to get economies of scale through a wholesale warehouse arrangement. Turning it around, we have voluntary chains, a different form of contractual vertical marketing system. A voluntary chain is sponsored by a wholesaler, and they enter into a contract with interested retailers. So retailer co-ops and voluntary chains differ in terms of who organizes them. Voluntary chains organized by wholesalers. Retailers cooperative, well, organized by retailers. But both have been created for defensive reasons, to allow independent retailers to compete with larger, stronger chains and still be successful, still get those economies of scale. Independent Grocers of America, a voluntary chain. Super Value Stores, a voluntary chain. Sponsored by wholesalers, enters into contracts with those retailers. Franchise system is, of course, a special kind of vertical marketing system. It involves a continuing relationship in which a parent company provides management assistance, the right to use their trademark, in return for payments from the owner of those individual business units. Anybody's family involved in franchising? Sometimes you get somebody who has a... Oh, yeah? Do you mind me asking who, or do you want to keep it to yourself? Arby's. Where's the beef? So is that one store, a couple stores? Two people, 12 stores up in this area, in this region? Stowe, Ohio. Cool. Very good. So here we go. Alive and well, it's a thing. Thank you. The franchisor is the parent company, Arby's. The franchisee is the owner of the business unit, the two people locally that own the stores. And the franchise system is the combination of the franchisor and the franchisee. This type of contractual vertical marketing system generates $1 trillion in annual sales. And it accounts for as much as 2/5 of retail sales. I love these fractional numbers I keep putting out. I never sat down with all the slides and figured out how are they counting the dollars, because I said 40%, 2/5, 1/3. Each slide lives by itself. One day I have to add them all up and see what percentage we're adding up to. But okay, 2/5 of all retail stores, according to our slide. So here is, join us for a new standard in QSR. Subway Advantage. Sometimes I hot link this to the opportunity. So you can get yourself a Subway franchise at subway.com and be on the success to the fast lane. So put your name in now. So one of the top franchises in 2023, Taco Bell, Popeyes, Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's makes a pretty good sub. The UPS store, Dunkin', pretty good coffee. Kumon, I don't know Kumon very well. Ace Hardware, Culver's, Hampton by Hilton, and Wingstop. What does it take to invest in one of these stores. Of course, it depends where you are, right? But you can get yourself into Taco Bell for as little as $576,000 up to 3.4 mil, into a Popeyes for 384K to 3.5 mil, Jersey Mike's for a mere 194K up to 995, UPS store 122K up to 508,000. So you can get into Hampton Inns for 12.3 million to 22 million. So it requires a little cash up front to get involved in these establishments. We can position our retail store, remember segmentation, targeting, positioning from a while ago, in a variety of different ways. Here we're thinking about two important dimensions for our retail store. The breadth of the product line, how many different sorts of things are we selling, and the value added, what are we bringing to the table for the consumer. And has anybody been to a designer store warehouse? At all? Yeah, designer store warehouse. What do they sell mostly there? I'm sorry, designer shoe, not designer store. Shoes, right? They're not really selling pants and coats and sunglasses, and maybe get shoelaces and shoe polish, but shoes is what they're selling. So we don't have a very broad array of product. And do they have a lot of personal help? They bring you your shoes and try them on and help you fit. They don't? Not really. So again, they don't have a lot of value added. They don't have a lot of product breadth. That's a particular positioning for a retail establishment, yeah? Compare that to a Walmart. Walmart, you can get shoes at Walmart, yeah? You can also get snow shovels, snow plows, shirts, pants, grocery items, and on and on and on. So their position is a very broad product line, not a lot of personal service at a Walmart, yeah? Down here at Tiffany's, a fairly narrow product line. I mean, they're focused on jewelry products. And they do have a lot of value added. You can get a lot of personal assistance, a lot of help in your selection. If you go into a store, there are people there to take care of you. And then finally, a store like Saks Fifth Avenue. They have a fairly broad product line, maybe not as broad as Walmart, with a lot of value added, a lot of personal assistance in the shopping process. So where might you position your store? Depends on what you're doing and what your competition is. Physical retailing stores, bricks and mortar stores, have four factors that we want to think about. We sometimes joke the important thing in retailing is location, location, location. Well, one thing to think about is the location. Where are you going to be? Here in Kent, where's our central business district? Well, downtown Acorn Alley, for example, would be one location where you can set up your retail store. Or maybe you want to be at a regional shopping center. We were just up at Beechwood Place over the weekend. Anybody work at Beechwood? Please, we have. Yeah, somebody that's working up at Beechwood, Sue likes to go to Nordstrom. I think we were also at Dillard's. Or how about, the advantage here in the regional shopping centers is they have a large anchor store, draws people in. They wander the mall and they come up on your retail establishment. Community shopping centers, down here, the Stowe Kent Shopping Center. There's no Macy's there. It's a different sort of selection. Or what about just a little strip mall? This is down here by the Giant Eagle Plaza, just a little series of stores by the side of the road. Each one has a little different image, a little different cost involved to it as well. Or a power center. How about something like Macedonia Commons? We have many, many, many different stores all in a single location, drawing people in from all around. Size, how big is your store going to be, is another factor related to the physical facility. It depends in part, of course, on what you're selling and where you are. Store design, Hershey's was helping with store design. What's your style? What's your appearance? What's your signage going to look like? And product layout. Also, Hershey's was helping with that. How are you going to allocate space to various products to make a good impression, to draw consumers in, to sell product? So, location, size, store design, product layout. This is the anatomy of a store during a Halloween season out in Hollywood, or thereabouts, Santa Monica. So here's the layout for the holiday shopping season designed to, again, they use the word lure shoppers in, with quick hit gift items, and then guide them down to more expensive fashions in the back. So we see we have window appeal over here. We've got stocking up items you just come in and grab. We're directing the flow around them, moving them back to the high-end products near the back of the store. A way to lay out your store for success. Also, we don't automatically think of it, but non-store retailing is a thing. For example, automatic vending. Where's our closest automatic vending machine? Right there. Hard to set up a store right there. Not so hard to set up an automatic vending machine. So here we have the sale of products using a machine with no personal contact between the seller and the buyer. Candy and soda and snacks and flowers are available in such machines. And who's been to an airport recently and seen some of the other items you can sell in a what else do you see there other than candy, snacks, and water? Electronics, and I mean expensive electronics. I can remember a time when you put your dollar in and wondered if you get the thing out or not, and we couldn't imagine in the day that people would trust their credit card and a $100 transaction in a vending machine. Things change, and at the airports you can buy electronics for fairly expensive stuff by swiping your credit card. Things change. Advantages to the seller, it's convenient. It certainly can expand your reach to places you wouldn't otherwise be. Again, you could hardly have a store out here in the hallway. There's some efficiencies depending on what sort of vending machine you have. For example, used to be you'd have to have somebody drive around literally to every machine you owned every day to see what it needed for stock. Now they can report to you when the stock is low. Somebody still has to drive around and fill it up, but still. Disadvantages, people break them, so they're expensive to service. You still have to drive around and have somebody fill up the stuff, so it's expensive to stock. And we keep changing the payment system. First we're using coins, then we're using dollars, then we change the look of the dollar, then we have credit cards, now we have Apple Tap. So you got to keep updating your vending machine. That can be expensive too. What's new in vending? Probably not too much right now. Sometimes we get some interesting stuff out on our click. Let's see what they're telling us might be new in vending today. So, on-demand soft serve ice cream. Haven't seen that one. A nice pizza. A pizza vending machine. Here's one we certainly need more. Beer, can vending. Champagne vending. I haven't seen this one at Ohio State, but a bacon vending machine, come on, get on board. Farmer's Ridge chef curated meats and snacks. Sprinkles cupcake, I want one of those. Le Bread Express warm fresh baguette. School vending for breakfast. From hamburgers to underwear to live puppies, since you'll find it in Japan. Vending machines. So, we're not doing live puppies here. Thank you. So, cashless payment systems. I just mentioned Apple Pay, Google Pay, smartphone interactions with artificial intelligence. The vending machine gives your phone real-time inventory and options if you're signed up. Energy-saving vending machines to maximize profit and productivity. Facial recognition. The machine offers a personalized menu based on the purchase history and prevents the machine from interacting with somebody who is not allowed to buy the product, such as underage customers trying to buy cigarettes, all new stuff. Redbox, how many people have had something from Redbox ever? And where's the nearest Redbox? Haven't done it recently? Just down here in the Acme Plaza, there's a Redbox there, and I think there's one downtown by the Walgreens or whatever store. Anyhow, Redbox is America's destination for affordable and convenient new release movies and video game rentals. About 1 million discs and sometimes a whole lot more are rented from our kiosks every single day. That adds up to more than 5 million rentals since we launched in 2002, when My Big Fat Greek Wedding and Men in Black 2 were hot rentals. Redbox is the best entertainment deal on the planet. We should know, we're everywhere. We have more locations in the US than Starbucks and McDonald's combined. So it's not hard to find us. You'd also find the lowest prices imaginable for today's biggest hits, with movie rentals from $1.75 a night Renting a new release movie from Redbox is half the cost of a new release cable movie rental, and we don't require a monthly subscription fee. Redbox, bringing retail through vending to a place near you. Direct selling is another form of non-store retail. This is where we get personal contact between a salesperson and a consumer away from a store that results in a sale. Door-to-door sales, obviously not real hugely popular today, but still people go door-to-door selling magazines or whatever. In-house or office parties. Anybody ever been in their lives to a Mary Kay or Avon or Tupperware or Pampered Chef party? Yeah, which ones? Which one? Mary Kay? Anybody else? Yeah, which one? Pampered Chef? Okay. And it's sort of fun. Was it at somebody's home? It was at your home. All right, so it's at your home. You have your friends over, family over, whatever. Usually some kind of entertainment among yourselves, maybe a little refreshment, a little socialization. We're all having a good time here, folks. And by the way, if everybody buys at least one item, your host gets a special gift. Yes, so no pressure here, but why don't you buy something? So that's a fun way to do it. Some people like the convenience of this sort of at-home stuff. The pandemic obviously hurt this for quite a while, but it's coming back a little bit. So, direct home sorts of things. Stella and Dot, Mary Kay, Avon, Tupperware, Pampered Chef, 31 Gifts, Scentsy, Traveling Vineyard, Beach Body, Tastefully Simple, Party Light, Benayou, Coco Exchange, Discovery Toys, and the Gold Canyon. All ways to engage in door-to-door sales. Some people like it because it's convenient. I don't have to go downtown. Some people like that personal contact with the sales rep. They know my fashion sense. They know my eyeliner preference, whatever it might be. If you're running such an establishment, such an organization, you got to pay those people pretty good to run those, to go out and do those home parties. And it's expensive to recruit them, to train them, to motivate them, to keep them. So you have to take that into mind for your channel of distribution, for your non-store retailing. Telemarketing is another form of non-sale retailing. Here, a salesperson initiates contact with a prospect and closes a sale over the phone. These days, of course, good luck with that, but it's still, in B2B, by the way, this is still a thing. B2C, it's pretty hard to do. It still exists. Magazine subscriptions, credit cards, athletic club memberships. Some people like the convenience, but you have a lot of disadvantages today with rejection, fraud, you never knew who you're talking to. Some places have legal restrictions on who's allowed to do telemarketing, what hours of the day, what days of the month, etc. So it's a thing, but not a huge growth area. Online retailing, you're familiar with that, where a firm uses a website to offer products for sale. E-commerce accounted for 16% of all retail purchases in 2019. Many new enterprises using this form of retailing, and more than 45% of bricks and mortars have adopted it. And I'm guessing that number is probably higher today than when I put the slide together. So another form of retailing to sell those ultimate consumers' product outside a physical store. So I updated it. 30% of direct-to-consumer brands say opening a store. So this is funny. I see my point here. So while a lot of bricks and mortar stores are talking about going on the web, it's interesting that a lot of web companies, direct-to-consumer companies, are now talking about getting into a store. So it goes one way, and then we talk about going the other way. Things cycle around in business. So 30% said of direct-to-consumer brands say they're thinking about opening a store.
Well, from a Walmart point of view.
This is an interesting little story about Walmart getting into that online business. They've been successful by now, but this is them just getting in. They've acquired a company called Jet.com to help them build out their direct-to-consumer side of their business.
Well, from a Walmart point of view, we're serious about e-commerce and want to serve customers in the way that they want to shop. And as we've been watching Jet.com grow, we've been paying close attention to the traction that they've had and their ability to scale so quickly. been an opportunity to meet Mark and to hear more about how he thinks about retail, and we're like-minded in many ways, and that caused me to get even more excited about it.
Why isn't this something that Walmart.com could build itself? You've talked about how over the last fiscal year and this fiscal year, you're going to be spending $2 billion to invest in Walmart.com. That is some pretty significant resources. What did these people have that you need?
Well, in some ways, it's an and not an or. We've got a great team in California that's been making progress on e-commerce. We've talked before about the fact that we needed fulfillment centers. We needed an operating system. We have just gotten to the point now where marketplace is starting to scale in a different way. Mm-hmm. So we're on track there, and we're going to achieve high growth rates. But we have even higher expectations and higher standards about what we ultimately want to achieve. And the Jet brand adds to the Walmart portfolio. Around the world, we operate 74 different retail brand names. Outside the U.S., we have a lot of markets where we have different brands to serve customers. And Jet's customer profile, the brands they offer, are accretive to Walmart. And there's some great skills. From a brand point of view, from a customer profile point of view, Jet's going to be additive to the Walmart offer. And there's some things about Jet.com from a design point of view, an offering to the customer from a price point of view that enables them to be even more empowered, and a smart cart and other technology that enable you to build a basket in a different way. So from a business point of view, basket economics are more attractive to us than unit economics, and that's one of the big things that attracted us to Jet.
So you might imagine that Walmart would develop this all in-house, all themselves. Why go somewhere else? Because they got the skills, they have a customer base, they have a particular technology. Let's just acquire it. There's no reason to have to build this out for ourselves. So that's worked out pretty well for them. This display talks about the wheel of retailing. I'm going to go back in history and show how it works a little bit in what I think is a bit of a funny approach. But I do wonder, we were talking about Kohl's today, and I do wonder if Kohl's is now getting a desire to be a little fancier, to move up from its, you know, sort of low-end base, which is exactly what the wheel of retailing talks about. So what it says is we have a retail outlet that starts with low prices, low margins, low status. Over time, they want to grow. They want to get fancier. So they add services, and now they have higher prices and higher margins and higher status. And they still aren't satisfied. So they eventually add still more services. Now they have still higher prices, still higher margins, and still higher status. But meanwhile, there's a gap down there where they came from, where they were. And some other entity, some other retailer moves into that empty space. So we say the reel goes around and around to some extent. The classic example of this from the beginning of the last century, Sears. Sears started as a catalog, I think you know that maybe, and it was fairly low priced with a huge assortment of products. Imagine it's the end of the 19th century, and with one catalog, you can buy everything from breads and tools to clothing and opium. Yes, opium. Not to mention ear trumpets, horse buggies, and Bibles. The 1897 Sears and Roebuck catalog is both a wonderfully fascinating collector's item and a valuable piece of American history. For every recognizable item included, there are plenty of others guaranteed to confuse or interest 21st century readers, like Bust Cream or Food and Sweet Spirits of Nitre. What was once standard household fare is today a sometimes strange, often funny look at what life was once like for the average American family. It's amazing to see that a princely shirt for princely men costs 95 cents or 3 for $2.75, or that a complete violin outfit with bow and case only costs $2. So they started pretty low price, pretty low margin, and they were almost a joke, pretty low status. If you had this catalog out in the rural area and needed something out in the outhouse to help out with the outhouse activities, use the catalog, low status. Then, of course, they begin to get a little fancier. So now we're out of the catalog business mostly, or at least primarily. We're now into suburban stores with lots of sorts of fashion. Then we get even fancier. We get into the Kim Kardashian fans.com look, Kardashian style Sears, my home improvement. And of course, they then crashed and burned, but they opened up areas where other places, the Walmarts or the Kmarts, could come in under them and move around. Direct marketing is another form of retailing. We can do direct marketing through direct mail. Let me see, I didn't take a picture this time. My wife goes off for a month to France, and we get catalogs up with the wazoo, and I stack them up for her on the dining room table so they're all there when they come home. Occasionally, I take pictures. Maybe I'll have it later on. It's silly how many catalogs you get. So it's alive and well as a form of marketing. Televised shopping. Anybody have an aunt or grandma that watches HSN, QVC, Jade, etc.? Nobody? Well, we almost always have somebody whose grandma loves sitting there and watching the deal, and they're going to phone before they're all gone because there's only 150 left. A different form of direct marketing to the consumer outside the store. Direct marketing drawbacks, no product sampling and delayed selling. It takes a while to get the product, so direct marketers have to offer liberal return policies, which is true on the internet too. I mean, that's the same sort of logic. Direct marketing catalogs and direct mail can be costly. Some of these catalogs are really fancy on really heavy-duty paper. They're quite nice. They've got to be created a long time in advance of the actual sale of the product. And they're really hard to update because they're expensive. They're physical product. So there's some disadvantages there. But some people like the convenience. Sometimes the price is lower. And in the time of COVID, it allowed people to shop with safe social distancing from their catalog, from their direct mail. What are some changes we see in retailing? Well, shakeout from overbuilding. When the economy is going great guns and we have a rising economy, I use the expression which you've heard before, a rising tide raises all ships. So even those marginal stores that aren't doing really great, the economy's growing, they're doing fine. Then when the economy sort of slows down a little bit, what happens to those stores? They're not doing as well. Do we really need 3 Starbucks in the same block of New York City? Might be too many. So the idea of shakeout from overbuilding, obviously adapting to consumer trends. We have the last remaining Blockbuster store. I forget what state it was in now, but we looked at it before. Trends have changed, and so the retail outlets have to change. And we're having this combination of bricks and clicks. Websites going to stores, stores going to websites, kiosks in stores where you can see the thing, press the kiosk button, and order up. It's interesting changes occurring. What we say here is that these changes are evolutionary. I don't know if we'll see a revolutionary change in retail. Who was my 3D printer guy? 3D guy? Maybe one day when you just order the software online and your home 3D printer prints whatever it is you want, that might be a total change in retail. We aren't there yet. So these are mostly evolutionary changes, not revolutionary changes. This is chapter 16. If all goes well, we'll see. We'll discuss chapter 17, implementing interactive and multi-channel marketing, after we look at chapter 20. So for now, we're skipping over 17. We're jumping up to chapter 18, integrated marketing communications. So let us so jump, assuming I actually downloaded that file. Yay, I downloaded that file. So chapter 18 in the book, something like page 245-ish. In the lecture notes, integrated marketing, communications, and direct marketing. So we're finally getting that fourth P of the marketing mix, product, place, promotion. Down to the 10,000-foot level as opposed to the 40,000-foot level over what you do every day. So we talk a bit about this element of promotion. In the context of the four P's of the marketing mix with the consumer at the center, we talked about product and services, price, place, and now we're going to add promotion to our combination, to our discussion. Pretty effective promotion example, Geico. We all know Geico? Geico was founded in 1936, so it's been around a while. And originally, the insurance company targeted government employees and military non-coms. The point of that part of the story is it's a very small market segment. They knew the company, and the company knew them. It was direct marketed, so it was sold without any agents. They used direct mail and telephone sales for 60 years. Then in 1994, 1995, they decided to expand their target market. And so, of course, to do that, they had to expand their marketing. So in 95, they spent $10 million on their first national TV, radio, and print ads. In 96, Warren Buffett, a pretty savvy investor, bought the company, and he said to the marketers, move faster, grow bigger. So by 2006, the ad budget was more than $500 million. That's some significant growth in your media budget, in your marketing budget. But we had an interesting problem. As it grew, it became apparent that consumers had trouble saying the name Geico. They didn't have a relationship with it. They didn't know what it was, and they kept reading it as Gecko. When people can't remember your brand name, it's not a good thing. So originally it was the government employees insurance company, Geico, but it became Gecko for consumers. So the company came up with a temporary idea, just something right now to help consumers clear things up, understand that the company was not Gecko, it was Geico.
This is my final plea. I am a Gecko, not to be confused with Geico, which could save you hundreds on car insurance. So stop calling me Geico. A 15-minute call could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I didn't want mail.
You don't have to sacrifice service to save money. Geico. A 15-minute call could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
They start off with the Gecko. That played pretty well. It got attention for the brand. They used humor, which at the time for an insurance company was unheard of. The second example was another example of humor. And so that played out pretty well. And they got their tagline going all the time. Geico, a 15-minute call can save you 15% or more on car insurance. So that played out pretty well.
So tell me in your own words a little bit about Geico.
The Gecko's
it's one-stop shopping, really, geico.com. You can get a free rate quote. You could compare coverage options. You could file a claim, pay your bill online. Even, you know, have a little chat with an associate if you need help.
What about you? Can they chat with you?
I'm here for Geico, love. Let's not delve into my personal life, eh?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
So it played out pretty well. Consumers liked it. They kept bringing it back periodically. And he's still wandering around the countryside somewhere doing insurance sales. So the lizard stayed, but more was needed. Geico wanted to draw in younger consumers. And it wanted consumers to realize that using the then new Geico.com was simple. So simple, even a caveman could do it. Anybody remember the caveman ads for Geico? It's a while.
It's so easy to use Geico.com, a caveman could do it.
What?
Not cool.
I did not know you were there.
It's so easy to use Geico.com, a caveman could do it.
What's that supposed to mean? Do you hear that?
That is really condescending.
How could it be offensive if it's true?
Okay, first of all, I'm not 100% in love with your tone right now.
Tone aside, historically, you guys have struggled to adapt.
Yeah, right. Walking upright, discovering fire, inventing the wheel, laying the foundation for all mankind. You're right. Good point. Sorry we couldn't get that to you sooner.
Connie, your reaction?
Sounds like someone woke up on the wrong side of the rock.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car.
So again, funny in its day, getting people's attention for this new product.com using the caveman example. More recently, they got into a joint partnership with M&M's. M&M's Geico combined for a delicious ad mashup, Ms. Brown, the Gecko, and a surprise guest. Geico and M&M's, the peanut butter and chocolate of humorous advertising, have teamed up for a tasty commercial in which Ms. Brown seeks to get insurance, much to the dismay of Geico's Gecko, who's clearly read the company handbook on providing coverage to candy. The edible are not eligible. There's a cameo by a third character, too, that was well-timed for the mid-week release of the ad.
Yes, I understand the fact that being made out of delicious chocolate makes me high risk for insurance companies, but I still believe I deserve coverage. And furthermore, I have been here for 15 minutes, which means, well, you know.
Geico only insures humans. Insuring a delicious piece of chocolate, I'd lose my job for that. And then what would I do?
Guess what day it is?
Save it, hump boy.
So, again, continuing with the humor, continuing some fun things, keeping people intrigued. Additionally, the social media campaign on Facebook, Twitter tells the larger story of Ms. Brown's efforts to secure insurance. Lots of people claim to dislike advertising, but just as brand-on-brand Twitter banter is quite endearing or entertaining, the odd little feeling of delight you get while watching Ms. Brown and the Gecko proves yet again that, try as you might, you actually can't resist brands at all. Well, an overstatement, but still fun. So we're engaged here in that fourth P of the marketing mix: product, price, place, and promotion. What is promotion? Well, promotion is communication. Think back to the days when we talked about market segmentation, and one of the criteria for a good market segment is it's reachable physically with the product, yes, but with your communication. People don't buy products they're not aware of. So promotion is one way that we use to reach the segment. Promotion is, of course, one of the four pieces of the marketing mix. We also, to confuse things, use the word mix to refer to the elements used by marketers in promotion. So we have the marketing mix, and then to confuse things, we have the promotional mix. So the promotional mix consists of the tools that we use to accomplish our communication goals and objectives. We'll go over those over time. The traditional roles of the promotional mix include to inform prospective buyers about the existence of and the benefits of the product, so in informational goals. Now that they're aware of that, they know what it is and the benefits are, we want to persuade them to try it, stop using their old brand, start using our brand, use our brand for the first time. And then later on in the product life cycle, a traditional role of promotion is to remind them to use our product. You remember us, you've used us before, you liked us, don't forget to buy us next time you're in the market. To this, we can add a somewhat new fourth role for promotion, and that is to build relationships with customers. We want them involved, we want them engaged, they want them to be fans, we want them to be part of our community. And so we have to find ways to build relationships with them over time. So, informational goals: communicate value to the customer, build a brand image, explain how the product works, suggest new uses for a product, inform the product about the existence of a new product, describe the services and support so they know what it is that they can get from us. Sometimes bad information gets out about us. Competition tells bad stories, something bad happens, so we want to correct false or misleading statements with informational ads. Anybody use Mio, liquid flavor for water? Sometimes you get Mio users here. Nobody? Yeah, you know what they are anyhow. So, inform prospective buyers. Pocket-sized packs of super concentrated syrups did not exist until Kraft Foods Group introduced Mio liquid water enhancers in March of 2011. By the end of 2013, the U.S. market alone was worth $412 million for flavor to your water. With dedicated fixtures in many stores, part of Kraft Foods' plan for fewer, bigger, better launches, Mio capitalized on the customization trend, drawing copycat launches from the likes of Coca-Cola's Dasani. If you're successful with a new product, other people want a piece. So here it is on the web. Here's the story about who we are and what we are. Hello, I'm Mio. What am I? I'm a nice, flavored water thing. We're informing prospective buyers about what we are. And here we are in video.
Never give up! Never break down! Never give up!
Studies show that up to 94%... That's the way
Introducing Mio, a revolutionary liquid water enhancer. Add a little, add a lot, for a drink that's just the way you like it. Make it yours. Make it Mio.
So you see, we're informing the people about it. We're telling them what it is. We're telling them it's customization. You can add a little, you can add a lot. It's portable, it's flavored. Yay, a new product. Then we might want to persuade them to try the product. Mom, they say on TV that Sudsy Wudsy is the best soap. That's just advertising, Dot. Everybody advertises that their soap is the best. Then how do you know which soap really is the best? You don't. You just buy the one with the best ad. Yay, Mom. So persuasive goals include building brand preference, encouraging people to switch to your brand, changing the consumer's perception of the product value. It's more than you thought it was, better than you thought it was. You get more than you expected. Get the consumers to buy it and buy it now. Convince consumers to tell others about their brand in their social network, among their friends. Persuade them to do something. I like this ad series, persuading women to buy a good smell-up for their significant others.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with two tickets to that thing you love. Look again. The tickets are now diamond. Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
Stupid as heck, but trying to convince you to get your man Old Spice and make him smell gooder than he does. For mature products, we just want to remind them. Reminder goals include maintaining customer relationships. You're our pal. We're your friend. You're in a family. We like you. Remind consumers they may see need the product. Thanksgiving's coming up. You're going to need some stuffing, some cranberry sauce, some fill-in-the-blank gravy. Remind consumers where the product's available at your local grocery store. Keep the brand in the consumer's mind during the off-season so when it rolls around, they remember that you're the brand that they like. Let me play this one through. This is where you're going to learn nothing new about Coke in this ad. All we're going to do is be reminded that Coke is a thing. The next piece goes on for too long, so we're going to call this an awkward place as always to break. Mini test 13 out of 13, opening tomorrow and running till next Tuesday. Happy Thanksgiving. Be safe. Don't let the bird get you. Have a good break.